as God is my witness, I thought turkeys could fly.
Welcome to Simple Flight Radio.
It's a show about aviation, which connects our listeners with the people
and things
that bring aviation to life. We're your hosts. I'm Al Waterloo.
And I'm Mark Eppner. So buckle your seatbelts and let's start the show. Well, it is July 31st, which of course is the day before August 1st. And that's a very special day for me. And this is Mark Eppner, by the way. And that is special for me because it was 4 years ago tomorrow, but since we're talking always Sundays, that Simple Flight Radio was actually, Al started it the week before, so it was at July 24th by himself. I joined August 1st, so we are celebrating officially our anniversary, our fourth year anniversary, and it has gone by so fast, and I think that's because we have so much fun doing it. And of course, it's kind of like a pitcher in baseball. When they pitch every 5 days, they can kind of go through the year, but they get to about 200 innings and their arm gives out. So there's shows like tonight where Al can't make it, and he's kind of the ace of the show, right? So the ace of the pitching staff. So Al is breaking down the Cirrus booth, hopefully in orderly fashion at Oshkosh, as we speak, and it was there setting it up last week, hence the reason why he's been unavailable. I don't know if you guys had a chance to make it to Oshkosh, but I did in a very limited sense. My plan, I wanted to go to Osh Bash on Tuesday night, and every year I commit to doing the Oshkosh thing, like go a week, camp out, and every year it turns out that I'm there for a day, maybe 2 days. So this year, I went on Thursday. I live in Chicago. I had driven my car to Madison, Wisconsin, because I had a presentation to make to a prospective customer. And after that was over, about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I said, you know, I am only an hour and a half drive time away from Oshkosh. I'm going to head over. And so I headed out off to Oshkosh, arrived about 3:45, and got out of my car. You know, started to get to the show about 4 o'clock, and most of the booths close about 5 o'clock. So in that hour, I bumped into a lot of people, friends, fans of the show, spent some time with Al. I saw Al and another friend that started a company, and he was in there exhibiting his wares, and we'll talk about his stuff a little bit later in the show. But it was great, and then I spent... Oh, my goodness. Went to a Cirrus dinner. They invited me about 6 o'clock in the Cirrus Village. Cirrus Village, for those of you that haven't been there, is an area in the campgrounds with RVs and all, and tents provided by Cirrus. And dinner was provided and all. It was just a great time, and I had some excellent conversations, again, to be shared a little bit later in the show. And then from there, went to the beer tent. Yes, with the bikini bartenders and the great music and the pretty good food and the nice fire and the great social atmosphere, and stayed there till about 11. Tried to get a hotel. They were all booked up, so I got in my car and went home. So from 4 to 11, I was in Oshkosh, finally hit the pillow about 3 a.m. But it was well worth it. You know, I wish I had stayed longer, but the time that I spent there was wonderful, and I wish I had seen more of you. I know Al couldn't get away to visit a lot with our listeners that do reach out to us. He was quite busy at the Cirrus booth. So we'll do a better job next year. Matter of fact, maybe we'll host an event for fans of the show. But I really enjoyed it, and I saw a lot of great things. As a matter of fact, what was interesting to me is I got a call on Tuesday. One of the members of the Flying Club that I'm associated with, Leading Edge Flying Club, LEFC, at Chicago Executive Airport. One of our members is very active in the Young Eagles, not the Young Eagles, the Aviation Explorer program, which is associated with the scouting program. And they do a lot of the Oshkosh groundwork, the marshalling of airplanes, things like that. And he called me on Tuesday, so one day into the show, and said, we're full. Nobody else fly up. You're going to be diverted to Appleton or Fond du Lac. And there's no campgrounds for not only parking for the planes, but no more camping, I guess, for the people. So I hadn't heard that in the last several years. So that said to me it was going to be an exciting show. It said to me it was going to be a energized show, and that the volumes of people would be back. So indeed it was, and that was reflected when I was there on Thursday. Again, I wish I had spent more time, but I will share a little bit of what it was like. The innovation, again, not only the energy from number of people, but also the energy from the announcements. There just seemed to be so much going on. And, you know, I just started writing down some highlights, and they go on forever and ever. Autopilots, low-cost autopilots. Europe opening up commercial operations to single-engine airplanes, which is something they hadn't done before. Cessna with their Denali. Avadyn introduced some new things. The third-class exemption that we had, that news going into it. Cirrus had some neat safety press releases to talk about. Piper coming out with yet a third engine for its Archer. Birthday Solo's back, right? Bendix King had some announcements, so on and so forth. I'm just going down the list. It's huge. Let's see what else. Okay, we'll talk about that in a second. I don't want to bring too much up because then we'll have nothing to do when we come back. So let's kind of reset. So that's very much about grassroots general aviation. And general aviation is I don't know if it's a misused or a misunderstood term, I guess is probably the best way to put it. Because when I think of general aviation, I'm thinking of single engine, 4-6 seat, maybe a twin engine piston. I don't normally put business jets into it. And of course, business jets are a big part of general aviation. Everything outside part 121 or maybe scheduled 135 fits the definition. But to me, it's this grassroots effort. But so important to the health of the aviation industry is this concept of the higher end, let's call it the business jet market. And so each quarter, we bring in Janine Iannarelli of Paravion Limited, which is her company, and their marketer of used business jets. And Janine's quite the influence and quite a representative of that space, and can always be depended on to come on the show, give us some insight, what's going on, markets up, markets down, what's going on. And she also, even though it's not her primary focus, helps us out understand what's going on in the piston market as well. So a lot of talk. Let's do a better thing and let's listen to her. So give me 1 second. We're going to get Janine on the show, and she'll be with us, I bet, in about 5 seconds.
Hello.
You didn't make a liar out of me. I said 5 seconds. It was just about 5 seconds for you to pick up the line.
Well, then, I'm always timely.
You are, and we appreciate that. So how are you, Janine?
Oh, I'm great. How are you this evening?
I'm wonderful. I get to be on the radio, the internet, talking about airplanes. So what could be better than that?
Especially on a Sunday night, right?
Yeah. Well, and I had a great day today. My oldest son, his wife, and their 3 children happened to be on their way out of Chicago. They were in for some other family event with my daughter-in-law's family, but made sure they spent some time with us, and that was great. So any day I get to see my children and or grandchildren is a good day.
That's a great day.
It is a great day. So we'll take that. But anyway, Janine, I'm excited to have you back on. It's been since April, I think, since you were last on. So a lot has happened, especially, and I know we're not here to talk specifically about the politics end of it, but I always think about how politics and who's elected and who's not impacts the aviation marketplace. So it's been interesting, to say the least, over the last several months, and now it'll get even more interesting as it goes to the Hillary versus Donald bashing. As a matter of fact, I probably won't participate much, and I'm not going to talk about here who I'm going to vote for. But I really don't enjoy this part of the election where people just start ripping on each other.
No, it just seems to be getting worse.
Yeah, it does, because it seems to be effective, or at least they think so. So I'm going to let them fight their battles, and I'm just going to make up my mind based on the facts and cast my vote when November arrives. But with that in mind, you know, give us a little bit of an update. Again, you, through your organization, are very active in business jet, especially the used market, and that really gives us some insight into how business is doing and ultimately how it's going to track the overall aviation market, right?
That's true, though, you know, we've been stymied, I have to say, by this economy, this perpetual malaise where there's an undercurrent of insecurity and lack of confidence that doesn't allow aviation as a whole to really have a boom or a growth period that allows for sustaining manufacturing, encouraging other buyers to enter the marketplace. You know, I still refer to it as a downturn since 2008 because I can't see where we've really had a huge upswing in aircraft sales. We've had bright moments over those period of time, but nothing that has really taken root and allowed for a traditional 18 to 24 month expansion and growth. You know, I keep looking for a particular industry that we could turn to. And of course, for a period of time, the oil and gas was a vibrant industry. And of course, now we're back into a downturn in that marketplace. So I just say that everyone keeps slogging along. That's the best word I could use. And this year, the problem is compounded by it being an election year. Typically in election years, we have very little activity. It stays quiet. Nobody expresses a great interest in acquiring airplanes, and we just keep slogging along.
But it's one thing, and I understand that people are making bets, whether it's a Republican or a Democrat that gets into a White House. But ultimately, if a business needs a tool, whether it's an IT solution or manufacturing capacity or business jets, I don't understand how that has such an impact, or that the politics has such an impact. If you need it, you need it, regardless of who's in office, right?
But you use a key word, need, and there is not as much need being expressed as there has been in years past. I think companies, to a certain degree, now, you know, of course, there are organizations that just absolutely say, we got to get there, and we have to move people by this means. And it's the only timely way to do it. And especially as you look at executive compensation packages, they continue to rise. Do you really want people who are highly paid individuals spending time, downtime, more or less, in an airport, on an airplane, trying to get from point A to point B, or multiple points? And they'll be out of the office for weeks at a time, as opposed to days at a time, particularly if they're traveling to remote locations or locations that are not well serviced by commercial airline. So, you know, need is a relative term, and we have seen a decline in need. Most of the buyers we are working with, and from what my peers say, they have a want or a desire. When you have a want or a desire, you can put that up on the shelf.
Right.
Sit back and, you know, wait for something to happen. And that's the difficulty that people in the trade face today, is that discovering the people or an industry where there's a real need versus those that simply have a desire.
Yeah, I understand that. And I wonder if the, and this, I guess, is a good question directly to you. You know, I mentioned, gosh, was it a year ago? I don't even remember when, but Motorola was getting out of the flight department, and they were just going to work with NetJets, I think it was, one of those fractional programs, as their flight department. So it seems to me they still are achieving their goal, but not going back to the airlines. And I wish I could talk about in calm voice about my horrible experiences just as an individual trying to travel the airlines over the last several months. It's every flight is delayed. Every flight is canceled, or that's silly, of course, delayed or canceled. The security lines, even though I'm TSA pre-check, so on and so forth. To your point earlier, it's just such a waste of time and keeps me from being productive. So with that as a backdrop, I would think then that nice to have or want does become a need, because you need to be in point A and then point B and point C. And so if it's a need, does it hurt the market or help the market when a company like a Motorola says, we're going to outsource ours? Is it a net zero-sum game, or does that hurt us?
I think it actually does hurt it, because they're not replacing the whole aircraft when they move to a fractional share. What they're doing is bumping people off airplanes and sending them back to the airlines or by other means of transport, whatever that may be. And, it makes no economic sense to buy a 100% share of an aircraft, which is the only way to have a replacement, if you will, for the flight department. So now you're cause people to lose their jobs. You've sold off the equipment. You don't quite have the travel flexibility as you once did. But that's an individual decision. I mean, each company, each person has to take into account their particular need to travel. And I've also seen where corporations have divested themselves of aircraft, gone a different route for a period of time, and then they've come back to whole ownership. For me, fractional share makes a lot of sense to a certain degree, but after a certain percentage, and I don't know for which company, again, that may be different, 25% or more, it makes more sense to own your own airplane at that point in time. And not necessarily a brand new aircraft, which of course then the capital investment is huge, but so is the cost of the investment in that share. And the monthly fees, and then the hourly fees, it adds up. I'm not quite sure what the real advantage is to go completely from owning aircraft to fractionals only.
Yeah, it's. I see your point, but I'm hoping that it also opens up the door if the fractional is a way to do it. Maybe those organizations that don't have flight departments, and again, with the current state of airline travel, maybe more people get into it. So there's more jets needed, if you will, based on at the fractional places. I don't know. I'm trying to figure out that somehow aviation and travel is needed more than ever, and dissatisfaction with the airline seems higher than ever. So somehow that feels like it should translate to some positive news in the biz jet market.
It should, but it hasn't as of yet.
Well, then let's all go out and buy business jets.
That would be a solution. Yep. That would certainly, I think there's a lot of people sitting on the sidelines. There are individuals sitting on the sidelines because what they see are falling prices. It's like trying to catch a falling knife. The sell-off in value has been just amazing, in my opinion. So they sit back and wait. And wait, I'm not quite sure for what. I mean, the perfect airplane is out there and probably at a price that they themselves can't believe. The corporations, there are corporations coming to the market looking for great opportunities. And there are value seekers and there are value opportunities out there.
Yeah, always, right?
Well, not always. You know, if we were in a rising market, you would quickly see a trend in declining inventory. Consequently, that means a shortage of high quality or highly desirable airplanes. And if, and this is a mantra that I've been repeating for years, right? That it's small, if small and mid-cap companies, both public and privately traded, would return to the buying fold, we very quickly have a shortage of aircraft. And not necessarily classic, aging aircraft, but certainly 20 years and newer. You know, I look through the rosters of former aircraft owners, and it just boggles my mind. People who owned airplanes for years, and then in 2008, 2009, 2010, divested themselves of that asset for whatever reason, and just haven't come back. I think I use the word malaise because it is. It's like a irritation that just won't go away. When you just don't quite feel good, you maintain, but you don't take a step forward necessarily or have the fortitude to go make the type of investment that ultimately would greatly benefit you.
Yeah, and I'm surprised, and maybe I shouldn't be, but I'm thinking there's always less expensive. So I don't go for my Gulfstream, I get a Citation or, you know, a Falcon. Of course, Falcons are pretty expensive too, but...
Different mission profiles. I'm sorry to interrupt you, Mark, but people don't do that. They don't look at one make and model that is so different and then gravitate towards another. They're in a category. And within that category, they may shop around if they're not already brand loyal. But they won't make a huge sacrifice like that if what they really want is long range and large cabin.
Right. No, that makes sense. So what do we do about it?
I don't know. If I had that crystal ball, I probably wouldn't be here on the radio with you because I'd be on a beach somewhere.
Yeah, really. Well, and I saw, and again, speaking to your comment you just made about the mission and all of that, but it's interesting at Oshkosh or just before the Denali by... Cessna, right? But Textron, we'll just go that and cover it all. So that the Pilatus type airplane, you know, I'm seeing more activity around there. So I'm getting the sense that that's a growing market there. Is that anything you watch and can comment on?
No, honestly, I can't because I don't, you know, certainly I take note of the aviation enthusiast and people making investments in more sophisticated singles and twins, but I don't watch the numbers other than the annual Gamma report.
Yeah. Well, again, maybe it's this, it's not meant to bring people back, but I suspect based on your words, these kind of announcements, this kind of airplane is meant to expand the pie in a market that really wasn't there before. And I'm sensing, and we should probably look at it, and we can get back to our listeners another time, is that I think we'll find, just totally a guess, that there is growth, and at least growth opportunity, if not actual real growth today, in that single engine turbine piston, you know, whatever 500 to 800 mile trip mission. I just get a sense there's a lot of energy around that.
Well, certainly I see energy in the small jet marketplace, relatively new small jet, mostly the Cessna product line. Mm-hmm. CJ2, CJ3s have had their ups and downs, no pun intended, but I'm seeing that as a bit of a bright spot once again. And interestingly enough, I'm going to take a plug here, opportunity to plug for an airplane I'm bringing to market is CJ3. And we have high hopes for the airplane turning in a relatively short period of time, not quite at the value that we had hoped. We've been speaking several months with the owner of the airplane, and I've certainly watched the market value decline at least 5% since we started talking. But still an active marketplace, and the same cannot be said about some of the other make and model of aircraft on hand.
Yeah, that's interesting. And, you know, I just saw actually this last week the European market, they had... up until now, forbade, or it was not legal to fly single-engine commercial operations, right? Let's see. I don't have the story right in front of me.
You know, there must be something more to that because the PC-12 operates in commercial operations.
Well, it said single-engine for hire commercial ops in Europe, and they spoke about TBM as an example, but all of those, have not been approved before, and now they've voted and final approval is due in the last part of this year. So there is something there that wasn't legal before and is now going to be legal based on their vote, if you will.
Well, that's interesting.
I'll send you the article.
Yeah, do that, please.
You can't believe everything you read, but that's what I read. So, okay, well, not the greatest news, but again, it's nothing different than what we spoke about in April. But since we spoke in April, I know you went out to eBase. Any news you can provide us about what you saw and heard there? That was in May, right?
It was in May. And according to EBAA, the European Business Aviation Association, attendance was up over the year prior. So that's good news. I felt it was a relatively quiet show, and one comment I made is that there were no buyers there, there were no customers, there were plenty of tradespeople, but we didn't see the proliferation in attendance of flight departments like we had in the past. In all fairness to the show itself, I think a lot of that has to do with the expense of Geneva. Hotel costs are just out of control, especially during the show.
See, if people had those business jets, they could sleep in the jet.
I'm sure that would go over really well.
Yeah. Well, actually, was it – who was it? Let me see. I know I took notes here. Where is this? One of the oh, it was, again, the TBM. So, again, a little bit different market. They introduced this new elite lavatory. It transforms from a toilet, a private toilet, to a seat, and they're now including it in some of their aircraft. So next thing you know, they'll have Murphy beds coming out of the wall for these guys.
I tell you the things that OEMs come up with to talk about. I think a potty seat's been in most aircraft for how long now?
Yeah, but and this one's like a transformer.
Yeah, and you know they're belted for takeoff and landing, and if there's not a child on board that usually gets stuck in the seat, it's the penalty box for everyone else.
Yeah, but then you don't have to get up to go to the John. You can just go. But anyway, I digress. We're going to go to a very bad place here.
Well, no, the wrap on eBase is I'm just looking at some figures from EBAA that they said attendance was up 2.5% over the year prior, with just over 13,000 people in attendance from 100 countries.
Wow. Well, that's, you know, at least it was up. Again, whether they were buyers or not, it's obviously a significant point to make. But at least, again, I'll call it that energy level. And I don't know the numbers from Oshkosh, which is obviously a very, very different kind of show. But my sense is it's going to blow away any numbers and show significant increase over previous years. And to me, you know, I treat aviation as aviation, and I'm just feeling a lot of energy around it, and hopefully for your sake and for the people that you work with, it translates to the business jet market. But general aviation, I just feel, has finally hit bottom and now on its way with a rebound.
Well, that's good to hear, and I will be interested in hearing the attendance figures out of that show. Though it's more, would you say, an enthusiast show as opposed to a trade show? And certainly everybody's there, so any potential customer gets the opportunity to put their hands on a new product. But I see it as more as entertainment than anything else.
You know, I think Oshkosh has waves. And as you get to the weekend, you get to the families not purchasing just there because they want to share aviation with the family, and which is still good for us in the long run. Maybe future pilots come out of it. But in the early days of the week, I get the sense that it is more, well, it is enthusiasts, as you talk about, but people that are passionate, people that spend money in the market, whether it's for a headset or an airplane, or whether it's for something they can put in their experimental plane, you know, a piece of avionics, or something that's going into their Part 23 plane. I just get the sense And not only just the energy level and the population, if you will, that was so much and evident, at least as it was through Thursday. I'm assuming Friday, Saturday, and Sunday also represented that. The entrepreneurship, then the innovations that we saw. I literally do not have enough time to go over all the new things that were introduced over the last week that are major steps forward for all of aviation. I mean, one company, and I happen to know one of the execs there, is UAvionics, ending in an X. And they have an ADS-B device that's like the size of a penny, weighs probably less than a penny, and consumes about as much energy as a penny. Well, okay, a little bit more, but very small. And whether it goes into a drone, which with collision avoidance built in, so it now won't hit an airplane even if someone tries to, or it goes into a business jet, this is going to drive down costs, drive up efficiency, as we say in the software industry, cheaper, better, faster. Why wouldn't you switch? It was that kind of innovation that I felt at this year's show.
Which is what's brilliant about a show like that, because it's not just grassroots, but it touches all areas of aviation. And I use the word enthusiast because what person who's involved in aviation do you know that is not passionate about whatever sector of the industry they're in?
Right. I agree.
And so, in a way, it brings together a great brain trust across the board. I mean, it's a fabulous show. And yes, you're going to chide me that I've never been to it one of these days.
Yeah. Hey, until you've camped out and hear the engines roar at 8 a.m. in the morning, or the grill going at the end of the day, enjoying hot dogs, hamburgers, whatever, turkey burgers, and a glass of wine. I mean, it really is two shows in one. And you, I think, maybe heard me, I think I mentioned it before we got on the show, is I didn't even make it for the show this year. I made it for the social aspect. And to me, that's every bit the draw, every bit the energy that the day is, right? So I missed one part of it, yet I felt like I still gathered it all in. And that's what's exciting to me is, this, as you talked about, the passion we all share and love just talking about it for a week without the interruption of that other labors of daily life.
Mm-hmm. The thing that always amazes me about EAA is the fact that the airport, Whitman Regional, can maintain its status as the busiest airport in the world as a result of the show.
Well, for that week at least.
If they do it on an annual basis, let's say, I'm reading here now, Jack Pelton announced that they had roughly 14,300 aircraft movements.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's, and they, to have 14,000 aircraft there of all makes and models, including business jets, and I suspect, and I don't know if Pelton has any numbers, but let's say it's 500,000-600,000 people. That's what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty amazing. You got to get there.
Yes. Those were the words I was going to use. You're right.
Pretty What's amazing. That? That you need to get there, or pretty amazing?
Pretty amazing.
Okay. We'll go with both of those. Next year. And I'll take you around. I'll show you the ropes of doing Oshkosh. It's a lot better than NBAA or eBase.
Well, how could I say no? When you have an escort, then it's always better.
Exactly. We'll go to the beer tent at night too, but that's another story. So let's shift the conversation a little bit, Janine. You know that when we talked last time, you were up for some awards and some things have happened. What's going on in the personal life?
Well, I think the show we did in April, it was following the Texas Businesswoman of the Year, which I was pretty thrilled to have been a finalist, a very rewarding experience. And you're going to scoop the story that
Yay, you heard it here first, folks.
Very few people know that I'm actually a native of New Jersey, born and raised there.
You can't hear it in your accent.
Been in Texas a number of years now, but I was informed over the summer that I will be inducted into the New Jersey Aviation Hall of Fame this coming September.
Yay! Congratulations.
Thank you.
As we would say, Mazel Tov.
I'm flattered, honored, thrilled. Small, quaint museum, but you know, hey, I'm thrilled because of the company that I will be joining there. So that was a little bit of the exciting news to share.
Absolutely. Again, congratulations. Well deserved.
Thank you. And I think the other exciting things that I've been involved with is the Texas Aerospace and Aviation Advisory Committee has now met a couple times this year in our efforts to help the Business Development Office in the state of Texas formulate a plan, strategy to go forward with into the next legislative session. And obviously the objective there is to grow aviation and aerospace as a whole in the state of Texas. You know, it's been a great learning experience for me, understanding the opportunity, the assets that exist for anyone who expresses an interest in forming a business here in the state or expanding their footprint, as well as prospecting, and as well learning about the state's initiatives. Mm-hmm. And one of the other things that I'm very proud of that the committee is working on is putting together a definitive list of entities across the state that support the education and promotion of aviation to our youth. And STEM is a big focus, of course. STEM particularly directed at young women. We want to encourage the pursuit of a course of study in math and science. And then, of course, with an eye towards meeting the demands of the aerospace and aviation industry down the road.
Very, very cool. All good efforts. Now, you mentioned women in aviation, and there's a website, and I understand there's a connection to a special event that's coming up, right?
That's correct. This coming September, September 24th, is Girls in Aviation Day. It's a global initiative. It's year two in implementation. It was started by Women in Aviation, the organization that was founded, I'm a little loose on the history, but 20 years ago. I'm an early member of the organization, and they came up with this idea to help further develop interest and introduce young girls into the potential careers that exist in aviation. So the day will focus on girls ages 10 to 17, though of course no one's going to be turned away. And they will have an opportunity, depending on where they are located, to perhaps partake in an event sponsored by the local chapter for women in aviation. And that's where it's important to go to the website for anyone who's listening and has an interest or knows of someone who might have an interest, is to go to wai.org, Whiskey Alpha India, and plug in their state. There's tabs there that they can search, and then contact the local chapter and find out what they're going to do for girls in aviation. And I'll say this, if there's not a local chapter, we can reach out to the national organization and say, how can I help put together Girls in Aviation Day in my local community?
That's excellent. You know, the and I'm out there, and it is a little counterintuitive because you said Women in Aviation, so I'm thinking WIA.org. But it's WAI, Women Aviation International, or something like that. So don't go with the first acronym that comes to mind. And just click on chapters, and there's 89 chapters, probably around the United States, although it says state or province, so let's call it North America. And you should check it out. And they have the name of the chapter, the contact, the website if they have it, and even the meeting, like here is Anchorage, Alaska. It meets the second Monday of the month from 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. with an address and a contact name and phone number. So Yeah, that's cool. And I've been hearing from many organizations a push to get women and girls involved in aviation, although I think we need those same pushes at all young people, regardless of gender.
That's correct. Yeah. That's cool.
That's what's going to drive, I think, a lot more energy and results, is getting more people interested. The need, I believe, is there. Now we just got to get it on people's radar screen.
Well, you know, I think if, when they understand that there are job opportunities, and this is something that I brought up at the state level, and recently I did a podcast with Comcast Newsmakers, and it was a focus on girls in aviation, but I brought up the fact that there are many trades that support the aviation aerospace industry, and that there are trade schools, and in particular in Houston, Mark, you and I have discussed this, that Houston has one of four aviation high schools in the United States. And trades such as metalworks and woodworking are crafts that students can develop, or if they have a skill set that they can further develop, and become fully employable upon graduation. I mean, the industry needs people like that, master craftsmen, not just the scientists and the mathematicians and the flight engineers or pilots and mechanics, other master craftsmen. And it's an industry that will see a shortage of qualified people in what, as soon as 5 years from now is what the numbers I've heard.
Yep.
So that comes back around to your statement about we shouldn't be gender-based, and I think you know me well enough to know that I never sell on the basis of gender or promote. Girls in Aviation Day is something special, and I think there is good reason for a little bit of push there. But you're right. You know, we need to speak to the youth as a whole and show them the opportunities that exist.
Exactly. I'm looking, so I just grabbed, here is... I came to the Chicago chapter because that's where I'm based, but you can find them all. So September chapter meeting the 24th, Women History Month for our 5th annual Sky's the Limit Aviation Camp for Women. High school age women are invited to explore, fly a fight simulator. So they have an event here in the Chicagoland area. So please, I recommend all of you, especially if you have your daughters or neighbors, someone that you think would be interested, let them know about this. And again, it's wai.org. Thanks, Janine, for bringing that up. All right, I'm looking. What else do we have? Anything else that I took some notes on things? It looks like we've hit most of these.
Yeah, I mean, I think the only other interesting thing is to talk about traffic, both domestic and overseas. And I looked at the figures for European, they're out for the month of June, and they show a slight increase in arrivals and departures, up 1.3% year over year, but for the year as a whole, it's still down. And I just read Molly McMillan's report in Aviation Week, and she shows North America is up.
Well, there's some positive.
That's positive.
Positive. It's up. It's not down.
It's not down.
Yeah, there you go. Well, good. Well, we'll continue to watch it, and we'll have you back next quarter and talk about maybe some very positive news. I think you're right, though, as we approach November, for right or wrong, people are going to make a decision on their optimism about the business climate going forward, and maybe that'll translate. But ultimately, I'm going to take the layman or whatever, the non-professional here, and just say I feel a lot of energy, and I think our economy is heading in the right direction. And then if the need's there, and again, you put with the unpopular way that commercial aviation is going, and I apologize to the airlines, but I have just had one bad experience after another, and I can't just be the only one with delayed flights, canceled flights, maintenance flights, that new airplanes, you know, sorry, we ran out of duct tape, that kind of thing, that people won't put up with that for long, and they're going to find alternative means to travel for business.
Well, those that can afford to do so certainly will.
Right.
But the whole commercial airline experience has deteriorated to the point that it's a necessary evil, particularly for the business traveler. I mean, you can understand when weather plays a role in a delayed departure or a canceled flight. You can understand when you have a mechanical. I mean, it's never pleasant. But what I can't understand is attitude. I cannot understand that when a flight crew, a cabin crew, let's be more specific, just really doesn't care about the level of service they deliver. And I mean, that's what they get paid for, as well as providing safety and attention to detail. But attitude is everything, particularly on a long international flight.
Even on a short across the lake, you know, I did a 45-minute flight between Detroit and Chicago that took me 6 hours. And again, I could have driven it in five. But to your point, one thing that bugs me is when a pilot says, we'll be back to you or we'll be going in 5 minutes. And then 20 minutes later, they say it'll just be a couple more minutes. And then another 30 minutes goes by. And they don't set my expectations. I would rather say I won't have any information for a half an hour or, you know, again, just more reality. But it's constant across airlines. That's one. Two, to your point, the cabin of the airliner was very tense. People were upset. You could hear people going to miss. And all the flight attendants were up at the front huddling for 15 minutes. They didn't want to interact with us. And again, I think they could have done a lot to slow it down. Now, there are exceptions, and I had one captain who came on, and we had a flight that we, you know, it was American Airlines, the Super 80s, which have a lot of, it seems like, maintenance issues, at least the ones I'm on. It's an older airplane. The captain was perfect. He apologized. He said, this is not the way we want to treat you, our passenger. And so while it didn't change the delay in having to find a new gate and a new airplane, at least he took ownership of the issue and indicated that it was not the way that they wanted to represent the airline. And I that made the thing palatable for me because the guy accepted accountability.
I had a similar experience on a Southwest Airlines flight. You know, instead of driving to San Antonio for a meeting, I elected to take Southwest. And it was just a mess because that was when a line of thunderstorms was moving through the state the whole day. Got there, no problem. Getting home took me 6-7 hours. But at least the crew, and you know, knowledge is a little bit of a dangerous thing because after pushing back from the gate and returning, no, actually we pushed back, we took off, we got almost all the way to Houston, and they closed the airport and they sent us back to San Antonio. It was the second time we pushed back from the gate and returned to the gate that I finally went up front and said, okay, what's your duty time looking like? Because that was my next concern, thinking I am stepping off this flight and renting a car. And the crew was wonderful. I mean, they kept everybody well informed. They were not afraid of answering, you know, very pointed questions. And while we were parked at the gate, they invited me to charge my cell phone in the cockpit and sit on the trunk seat. It turned out to be a horrible experience made more palatable and able to get everyone. I mean, the good news was they said, we're going to get you to Houston tonight. It's just a matter we may not get home, which they had to go all the way on to some destination in Florida thereafter. So communication is important. Isn't that true about everything in life, though, Mark?
Oh,
communication
yeah.
alleviates a lot of tension.
Yeah, I think it is. And to be honest, again, a little knowledge may be a dangerous thing. I flew into Denver, and it was a very weird approach. You know, I'm coming in, I'm feeling like we're not heading down a glide slope. I felt like we were at low altitude. Pitch was very high. Again, it was a Super 80, so, you know, I hadn't been on one in a while. But it felt like we were dragging in. And then we went around, and it was 10 or 15 minutes, and the pilot said, ladies and gentlemen, obviously we didn't land, and we just got too close to the airplane in front of us. So, of course, me being the smart ass that I am, it was a couple nights later, I went to liveatc.net just to listen to the audio archives. ATC didn't know why he went around. They asked, and the co-pilot just answered, captain's decision or something like that. The captain made the decision, which is fine. I think the PIC absolutely has to make those, but it had nothing to do with encroaching on another airline. Something wasn't right, and so the captain made what I'm sure was the correct decision. But why tell us it's for one thing when it wasn't? You know, we had to go around and, you know, we're coming around again and everything's going to be okay. Nothing wrong with the plane would have been fine. But again, I just felt like someone wasn't honest with me.
And that adds to a passenger's frustration.
Yeah.
Hey, one last thing I want to bring up, one positive thing.
Yay.
I would say out of our election year, that the candidates travel by business jet.
There you go. Well, I know Trump does. I've seen his 757 in Des Moines when this whole thing started.
And so does Hillary Clinton.
Yay, okay.
I think during the primaries, she traveled in a Falcon.
Actually, I think you're right, because I know she has been to Chicago, which is her hometown, and she comes in actually this airport, Chicago Executive. And I think she did come in a Falcon. I haven't seen her here this year, but in previous years, she has come in a private jet. So
that's the one bright spot. Both candidates make use of business aviation.
That bodes well for general aviation and business aviation.
Well, I think it validates our message. There's only one way to effectively get from point A to point B, or many points in a short period of time, and, you know, to some degree feel well rested. Of course, riding on a Boeing 757 configured for, I don't have any passengers, 40, is a whole lot different than even sitting in a Falcon 900 configured for 12.
Yeah, well, and I don't know if you've been out to YouTube to see the Donald's 757, but down to the gold thread with the family crest and the pillows and 24 karat gold this and all. It's just
a friend of mine in the industry did the completion, and he's so meticulous and very tasteful in the job that he's done, and I'm sure it's the finest quality work in that Boeing.
Yeah.
They have a very discriminating customer there.
I guess so. Anyway, well, it'll be what it will be. And I've got optimism for not only business jet, but all of general aviation going forward. So hopefully next quarter when we talk, we can start to see those kinds of results.
All right. Well, I hope so, too.
All right,
Mark,
Janine.
Rest of summer.
Thank you. You too. It's I feel like I'm in most of it, but hopefully this week I can get out a few days early, see what that yellow thing in the sky is. Looks like we're going to have some nice warm temperatures in the Chicagoland area. But again, thank you for spending your Sunday night with us. We appreciate it and look forward to our next conversation.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Have a good one.
You too. Good night, Janine. Excuse me. Good night.
All right. Bye for now.
Well, there you have it. So not all positive news, but some positive news. And we appreciate Janine Iannarelli coming on again quarterly to talk to us about the market trends, especially in the business jet market, of which she's an expert. And her company is Par Avion Limited. It's paravionltd.com. And again, they focus very much on the marketing and sales of the aftermarket or the used market for business jets. I think Falcon is one of her primary and favorites, but certainly all of those planes. So you can follow up with her with any further questions. So we're quickly approaching the 60-minute mark. I might go a few minutes over, but I did want to cover some of the excitement I saw not only while I was at Oshkosh on Thursday night, but beyond that. And as I mentioned earlier, a lot of innovations, a lot of energy, a lot of entrepreneurship, just an awesome thing. And when I hear on a Tuesday, the day after it starts, that they're full, that they can't take any more aircraft, then I'm thinking we're having a good year, right? So I'm just going to do a smattering of announcements and good feel-good type things. I loaded up my iPad with some feedback here. True Track autopilots. These are three-axis autopilots that can be added to wide variety of airplanes. Only $5,000. I thought that was pretty cool. You know, we're all used to flying these very expensive autopilots, two-axis autopilots. So I think, again, we're starting to see some disruption in the market that's going to translate to cheaper, better, faster, which is just absolutely critical. I mentioned the single-engine commercial operations in Europe being approved, and it's in the process of being approved. So TBMs, Meridians, all of that will now be able to use for hire commercial operations. The Cessna Denali, which is something that won't fly for a couple of years, 2018, but is a Pilatus, I don't want to say look-alike, let's just say in the same market as a Pilatus. And obviously Cessna sees an opportunity, and as I think it's just a wonderful airplane for that mission. You know, tremendous efficiency, economy, and range for the business person that needs to get, you know, actually the range is, I think, for single engine, probably the farthest of all aircraft. Avadyne announced some new wireless opportunities and things, and the ability to talk to different mobile devices so that you're not just limited to the real estate of their avionics, the IFD series, and the other ones that they're out there. The third class exemption, we went into the Oshkosh show with it already being announced that Obama signed it. Now we have the next 180 days to kind of define it and 360 days to implement. What does that mean? And I know in my reading there was three areas of concern. What about people that have disqualifying things today? And they're very focused on cardiac, neurological, and emotional. And so it'll be interesting to watch that, but I'm very optimistic that some good things that will be bringing back people that should be allowed to be in the air, and they will put them in the air. You all know I'm a fan of Cirrus. Excuse me, I got a cough coming. Take a drink of water. Thank you. And Cirrus won an award for safety. Every year they have dropped their fatality rate. You know, people always said, what is it with Cirrus? It's technologically advanced airplane. It's got the parachute. Why are the fatalities so high? You know, when I was growing up and flying in the 70s, the Bonanzas were the doctor killers, and then the Cirrus got that that name. And wasn't necessarily deserved, but there was a lot of issues. And, you know, a couple things are at play here. One, and most important, people weren't pulling the chute. And so insurance companies started to say, we'll waive the deductible if you pull the chute. You know, it's not a bad thing. Old-time pilots would say to Cirrus pilots, you know, you shouldn't pull the chute. We were taught how to glide to a flat spot. Farmers' Field isn't always flat, by the way, and you don't want to flip at 70 knots. The chute is the way to go, and it's there. And so Cirrus has spent a lot of time teaching people the culture of Cirrus. They call it the Cirrus approach on what and when and how to do the caps, the parachute system. And that has translated to significant declines in fatality rate. And there has been analysis about how many fatalities more could have been avoided with a different culture about it's okay to pull the chute. For whatever reason, it's okay. And it's really translated. So congratulations to Cirrus on that. And now truly bringing safety. And I mentioned that when I was in Oshkosh on Thursday night, I went to the Cirrus tent for a dinner that I was invited to. And I spent time with different folks in sales and marketing and in training. And I forget the gentleman's name who is leading up some of the connection to the customers and training. And there, you can tell there's a sincere effort to align with the customer, to teach the Cirrus way, to make it a utilized and safe means of travel. And I'm sure all the manufacturers have the same intent. I don't mean to single Cirrus out. I just happen to be there that night and have the conversation. And I was very impressed with the focus on helping people to be better pilots in their new aircraft. So congratulations to Cirrus on that, and pull the chute. I talk about innovation. Piper introduced the IO360 into the Archer, right? Archer has always been first a carbureted, and then recently they offered a diesel engine in it, and so now they also offer a fuel-injected engine. So it's the first manufacturer that offers three engine choices in an airplane in that market. So that's pretty cool. The FAA not only introducing the third class exemption, they also reintroduced the birthday solo. As you recall, probably, that it's always been many young people's goal to solo on their 14th birthday for gliders, 16th for powered flight in the U.S. And an FAA came up with a rule about when you can apply for that student certificate or the ability to solo and get that sign-off. Recently, they had come up with something that basically said, on your 16th birthday, you can go ahead and apply for it and then get it in a couple weeks and go fly. There was so much pushback, and the FAA, being much more customer-friendly than they have in the past, made a change. So now the birthday solo is back. All right, let's see. What else do I have here? I got so many notes. That was all off of paper after I told you I was pulling up my iPad. Now I'm pulling up my iPad. I'm going to go as fast as I can here to get you guys home in time. Like, you have to travel home. I'm actually the one traveling home. And here we go. Oh, I mentioned UAVionics. That's UAVIONIX. How exciting. The world's smallest, lightest ADS-B devices for unmanned or UAS. What is that? Unattended service. I don't know, but don't want to make it gender specific. And general aviation. And so this device, which, like, again, think about it, the size of a penny. The weight of it probably is light, if not lighter than the penny, and very low power consumption. So now drones can have ADS-B, so we know where they are. And they can use this technology to avoid incoming or oncoming traffic so that this accident waiting to happen of some novice flying their drone around, gets above 400 feet and gets sucked up into an engine or something, just won't happen. So this company, and again, I should point out, I do have a connection to this company. The COO is a friend of mine. So with that point out there, I still think it's just a disruptive, awesome technology. And congratulations to UAVionics for, excuse the expression, piloting that. Here we go. Sorry, I should have all this queued up. Icon focuses on training. Right, we talked about Icon recently with their their legal agreement, which was too long and too invasive and too controlling, and they reacted to the public and pulled back on that, and now they're very focused talking about training and making themselves like a Cirrus, that once you get people trained, you're going to have a good outcome and result. Let's see. Aspen announces ADS-B dealers, autopilot interface. You know, everyone's trying to get ADS-B out there and dropping the cost of aviation. I mentioned the TBM offers Transformer Lab for TBM lines. So it basically, the option, the Elite Privacy configuration, integrates a small lavatory into the very rear of the aircraft cabin. When not in use, it functions as a bench-type seat. It's electric, I guess, and appears to be like a transformer. The TV show or the movie, a pair of electric motors drives a multi-segment partition that encloses the lav seat at the touch of a button. Second touch restores it to the bench seat. Removed and installed by a mechanic in about 30 minutes. It weighs 90 pounds. And it sits in the back along the right rear wall. So that's pretty cool. Eclipse introduced a new jet called the Canada Jet Upgrade. It modifies the E550 jet and includes a bigger wing, an engine upgrade, Garmin 3000, carries more fuel, 1,400 nautical mile range, and payload will increase by 475 pounds. Twin-engine jet will be powered by a flat-rated version of Pratt & Whitney's PW615, adding an extra boost to performance. 24% shorter takeoff requirement will climb to flight level 400 in 47% less time. It'll fly in 2018. It will sell for about $3.5 million. We talked about that. Birthday solos are back. So, you know what? It goes on and on and on. I'm not going to take any more time. But my goal is to let you know of the optimism out there, to let you know that we're coming off of a great week at Oshkosh because it bodes so well for general aviation, specifically EAA, the experimental, the Part 23 piston, small airplanes, and that's what I'm excited about. Last thing, and this one, I need your help. Many of you know that I have been in the market for an airplane to buy with a couple partners. I'm going to buy used. I looked at a new one, but it just made more sense based on what we're trying to achieve, the three of us, to get a used, and I'll let you know, it's a Cirrus. That's what we're looking at currently. And one of our members said, you know what, we should look at Savvy Maintenance Management Services. And this is the operation run by Mike Bush, who knows the IO-550 probably better than anyone. And so here's my question to you, and I'd appreciate your email feedback or to the show. My email, by the way, is ME, as in Mike Echo, 02 at AOL.com. What do you think? At $70 a month, you know, some $800 a year, they don't do the maintenance. They manage the maintenance that for your airplane, making sure that mechanics do the right thing at the right time at the right cost and don't do the wrong thing at the wrong time at the wrong cost. Of course, I would say that. So I'm interested, what do you think? We have one owner of a partnership of the, one partner in the ownership that is saying they've done it before, they found tremendous value, we should do it. I've had others say to me, well, you guys are pretty experienced, you probably don't need it. I'm interested in your viewpoint. And we'll talk about it later because I'm sure Savvy Maintenance Management, again run by Mike Bush, does a great job. And just don't know if it's right for our particular general aviation type use. And that's that. So happy anniversary to me. Happy anniversary to Al Waterloo. And happy anniversary to all of us as we celebrate our fourth year of doing this radio show / podcast. And, of course, it wouldn't be possible without you, and we really do appreciate. I know if Al were here, he'd be telling you the same thing, singing your praises that week in and week out, all of you continue to listen, and we really do appreciate it. And it's the thing that keeps us going, and we're looking forward to a great fifth year. So until then, blue skies, tailwinds, and we hope you have a great night. Good night, everybody.